Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to CNN's The Rewind. It's a podcast that takes you back in time and shows how CNN covered the people and events of the past that impact your world today. I'm your host, Michaela Pereira. Today, we're going to take you back to August 31st, 1997, the day the world heard about the tragic and sudden death of Princess Diana.
Diana, Princess of Wales, has died after a car crash in Paris.
It is hard to believe it's been 20 years since this happened. I don't know about you, but I know exactly where I was when I heard the news that the Princess of Wales had been killed. I was actually receiving an award in Victoria, BC, Canada. I remember the crowd being stunned into silence. This event was so devastating that it shook people from all walks of life, all around the globe. So many people responded to Diana's death that even her memorial site outside the British Embassy in Washington, D.C., overflowed onto a sidewalk of flowers. On the day of her funeral, millions of people lined the streets of London to say goodbye to their princess. An estimated 2.5 billion people around the globe tuned in to all of the television broadcasts. If you don't know, or perhaps you don't remember the details, Diana and her boyfriend, Dodi Al-Fayed, had traveled to Paris for a vacation. Fayed was the son of an Egyptian billionaire, a film producer, and oh, by the way, an executive producer for 80s and 90s hits like Chariots of Fire, Hook, The Scarlet Letter. So during this vacation, the paparazzi relentlessly followed this couple. They took photographs of the press dubbed Princess and the Playboy, Diana and Dodi on a yacht, Diana and Dodi kissing, Diana and Dodi on the beach. Tabloids and newspapers across the world spent buckets of money for these photos. One photographer, an Italian, Mario Brenna, alone earned millions of dollars for his photos of Diana and Dodi. The Globe paid him $210,000 for exclusive rights to publish his images across North America. On August 15th, 1997, 2 weeks before Diana's death, CNN's Larry King talked to Globe editor Tony Frost and other journalists about these controversial Paris vacation snapshots.
Tony Frost, why did you pay so much money for those pictures?
Because, Larry, every week I fight a very combative battle to increase the circulation of Globe, and I felt that these pictures were irresistible. They're classic tabloid photographs, and we had to have them, so I decided to give Globe readers a treat.
Did the Italian photographer who took them open them up for bid?
They were open for bid, and the bidding was pretty fierce, but I decided that I wouldn't nickel and dime anyone over these pictures. I wanted them, and I asked what price it would take to get them off the market, and that figure was $210,000.
If one were to ask, what is the big deal of two single people out on a boat?
Larry,
I mean, put it simply,
this is
millions of people are doing that around the world. You don't show they're not having sex. They're two people on a boat hugging each other. Could have been a nice afternoon.
These are the first photographs of Princess Diana emotionally and physically bonded to a man, to a boyfriend. Her first public display of affection since her divorce from Prince Charles.
How do you know that it's emotional and physical?
Because Globe has extremely good sources, as you know, Larry, and we're told that the physical bonding took place a short time earlier than these photographs were taken at the Ritz Hotel in Paris, which is owned, incidentally, by Dodi's father, Mohammed Al-Fayed.
And Joanna, what do you make of the pictures?
Well, I think the pictures are very interesting. I mean, it's always been known that when Diana finally found another lover or another boyfriend, these pictures would probably be among the most expensive pictures ever in the world, which they've proved to be. I don't really think it's going to make a huge amount of difference to Diana's standing in the British public. I think the public are getting a bit tired of her. And the idea that she might be able to have a relationship with someone else, like Dodi Fayed, suggests that she might at long last be coming to terms with the fact that her marriage to Prince Charles is well and truly over, that her love affair with Buckingham Palace and the royal family, it's time to move on. And, you know, where better to go from Buckingham Palace than the son of the man who owns Harrods?
Before we talk about Dodi El Fayed, what Janice and People magazine is an excellent barometer of American celebrity tastes fascinates us about this woman.
It's a wonderful fairy tale gone wrong. What is there not to like about it? She's a beautiful woman. She was in a bad marriage, and now everyone's rooting for her to find love again. And unfortunately, it seems like she might not have found the right guy. But
why do you say that?
Oh, well, for many reasons. I think this is the guy that mothers everywhere warn their daughters about. He's rich, he's charming, but he's bad news. He woos women incessantly.
Have women complained about, are there women on the record saying that he's bad or he's just likes women?
Well, both. I mean, obviously there was the fiancé yesterday who came out with that ridiculous press conference about how she's, you know, she didn't know that their engagement was off until she saw the pictures of Dodi with Di. But, you know, women have told us, friends of Dodi's have told us that he is really a love him and leave him type. And he does things, his ex-wife told us that, you know, he does such extravagant things, like when she would fly over to London to see him, he would buy her a seat on the Concorde and buy the seat next to her so no one would have to sit, so she wouldn't have to sit next to anyone.
Sounds nice.
It sounds very nice, and who wouldn't fall for that?
She complained about that?
No, she was saying it was quite wonderful of him. But, you know, I think and she only had nice things to say about him, but
so
for...
Now let's get back to him. Why are we rapping him?
Oh, well,
his ex-wife had nothing but nice things to say on.
Okay,
he dates women. What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that, I guess. But if you're one of these women who was thinking that you were the sole object of his attentions at any given time, then you probably got your feelings very badly hurt.
So with photographs of Princess Di and Dodi El Fayed's Paris vacation fetching such a high price, more photographers wanted to get in on this action. In the early hours of August 31st, 1997, Diana and Dodi's driver, Henri Paul, sped through Paris trying to avoid paparazzi on motorcycles. And the car, it wrecked. It was a horrific crash. The car was crumpled into an almost unrecognizable heap. Henri and Dodi died on the scene. Diana died soon after in the hospital. That crash also injured the sole survivor, Dodi's bodyguard, Trevor Rees-Jones. Tests later showed that Henri Paul, the driver, was driving intoxicated at the time of the crash. Newsweek's Paris bureau chief, Christopher Dickey, announced the death of Diana, Princess of Wales, on CNN Air.
It's just been announced that Diana is dead. She suffered serious internal injuries. They could not recover, and she succumbed.
Christopher, we're very sorry to hear that news. How has the reaction been within the briefing room where you're gathered? How did you find out who told you?
We were told by a hospital employee making a public statement, and now the French Interior Minister, Jean-Pierre Chevènement, is speaking and expressing his condolences.
All right, Christopher.
It is confirmed that she's dead. She succumbed to massive internal injuries.
Later that day, Prince Charles traveled from Scotland to Paris to collect Princess Di's body. After hearing the news of her death, friend and singer Elton John rewrote and re-recorded his 1973 song, A Candle in the Wind, which he performed live at Diana's funeral. It is simply a beautiful rendition.
And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind.
Anna Frances Spencer was thought of as the people's princess. Why was that? Well, mostly because she seemed so relatable. We're going to talk more about that after a short break.
Wherever I go, I hear about people's affection for her.
A lot of the problems that young people face today she was facing, and so she became a kind of a symbol to them.
Welcome back to CNN's The Rewind. I'm your host, Michaela Pereira. You just heard the late Nancy Reagan give her theory on why so many of us around the world were enamored, even obsessed with Princess Di, and really felt like we could relate to her, even though clearly she had a much different upbringing than you and me. Diana was born into an aristocratic family in 1961. And if you think about it, she essentially married the boy next door. You see, as a child, Diana lived in a 10-bedroom mansion on the country estate of none other than Queen Elizabeth II, her future mother-in-law. This mansion was called Park House. It was set in Sandringham, Norfolk. Really, you should look it up on Google. It is simply beautiful in the countryside. So amazing. On this quaint countryside manor, Diana grew up playing with Prince Andrew and Prince Edward, who were close to her in age. Obviously, they also happened to be Charles's younger brothers. Well, in 1979, at age 18, Diana moved to London, pursuing her dream of helping children. She found work as a nanny and then later on as a kindergarten teacher. And then, in the summer of 1980, Diana received a phone call that would change her life forever. Prince Charles, the Prince of Wales, the eldest son of the Queen and her heir apparent, asked her on a date. Well, Diana soon had a new royal beau, as well as unwanted and often difficult relationship with the press. You can see the beginning of the people's obsession with her when you look back to Diana and Charles's wedding. More than 700 million people worldwide tuned in to watch the 1981 wedding. And yes, I was one of them. Boy, was it a beautiful ceremony. Do you remember that wedding dress? Puff sleeve, silk taffeta gown. It had a train that was 20 feet long. The whole thing decorated with lace, embroidery, sequins, and something like 10,000 tiny pearls. But Diana herself was openly frustrated by all the attention she received and spoke out against the constant paparazzi. In fact, the paparazzi later came under the world's microscope after her death in 1997, some people even blaming the car crash on the paparazzi industry and the public's insatiable demand for celebrity photos. The appetite for pictures of Diana was unlike anything we had seen before. A day before Diana's funeral, on September 6, 1997, Larry King spoke to a panel of folks who knew or worked for the royal family to try to make sense of this new era of celebrity. This panel included one of Diana's friends, Richard Branson. Yes, that Richard Branson, the founder of the Virgin Group, which includes, of course, Virgin Atlantic Airlines and Virgin Galactic. Here he is back in 1997 speaking to CNN about Diana's impact on the public.
Why did everyone love her so much?
She was beautiful. She was caring. She was witty. And she used herself very, very positively, and she did lots of great little things. Which, in fact, I suppose a lot of those things have only really come out in the last three or four days. And there won't ever be anybody quite like her again, I think.
Jonathan Dimbleby, who was a biographer of Prince Charles, also weighed in.
She is now a sort of martyr. She's like a Joan of Arc figure, the grieving in this country, the public grieving. I knew that as soon as it happened that there would be real distress. I had no idea, I think many people didn't, of the scale of mourning that there is in this usually slightly stiff upper-lipped country. And I think in part it's because people also in part lived through her. The things that she did, people didn't resent her wealth. They didn't resent the fact that she lived a glamorous life. They half thought, well, I'm living that life through her. When she picked up and cuddled a sick child or shook the hand of someone, touched someone with AIDS, she did it on their behalf. And so when she died, it's a cliche, but part of them died as well because she had entered their psyche. And that's, I have not seen that phenomenon before. I've heard about it, but I've not seen it before.
All right, time for us to take a quick tea break. I said tea. When we come back, we're going to talk about Diana's lasting legacy.
It was easy to see the cover of People magazine. I gather she was on the front 80-odd times, and see the glamorous dresses or the marital difficulties or whatever. But to get to the substance of her work, you know, it was almost she had to die before people realised what she had done.
Welcome back. I'm Michaela Pereira, and you're listening to CNN's The Rewind. As you can imagine, once news broke of Diana's separation from Prince Charles, she made it clear she wanted her children left out of the drama. The boy's uncle, Diana's younger brother, Charles Spencer, he seemed to take note of the care with which Diana raised her two boys, her royal sons. In 2001, 4 years after her death, Charles gave CNN's Stephen Fraser a tour of Althorp, the family estate where Diana is now buried.
Her role as mother to those two boys, that was probably the most important thing to her.
I really adore those boys. What I always stress to them is that I'm just always there and they can bounce anything off me, and that's all I can do. Unfortunately, it's nothing, you know, I can't bring their mother back, but I can do what I can as an uncle.
Diana's love for her children was evident to those who knew her best. Her step-grandmother, famed writer Dame Barbara Cartland, spoke to CNN's Martin Savage in 1997. You really need to look up photos of this lady. She was quite a character. Let us talk about her hats.
What do you think the impact of Diana's loss will mean for the children, for the princes?
Well, I think they'll be absolutely broken-hearted. She adored them, you see, and she was so proud. I wrote to her once because my son had been shooting with the eldest one, and he behaved very nicely, shot very well, was very polite to all the older gentlemen. And I wrote and told him the change, and she wrote back such a letter, so delighted, so thrilled that they were really appreciating them. They're terribly nice boys, and I think all their lives, they will miss and feel upset they haven't got the mother they loved so much. What can we do?
In the years since Princess Diana's death, we have heard from the princes about their love and respect for their mother. We've seen her sons pick up some of her charity work habits, especially in regard to mental health awareness. Diana dedicated much of her time to causes that she really cared about, which is what the designer behind Diana's stunning 1981 wedding dress told Larry King in 1997. Here's Elizabeth Emanuel.
Being only perceived as some fashion model probably got in the way, because her main concern was for her charities and all the work that she was doing. And it must have probably got annoying for her that all, you know, the press would only pick up on, you know, like what shoes she was wearing or the hat or the dress or whatever, when her work she considered the most important thing of all.
Richard Dalton, who worked as Diana's hairdresser from 1981 to 1990, added that she was aware of the ways her style distracted from her charity work.
She felt that her hair was such a major fashion statement, and she wanted it to be her charities, her aides, everything she was doing, that was her number one, and she didn't want the limelight to be taken away from that by something as simple as her hair.
Princess Diana used her fame and the media to her advantage, becoming an activist for dozens of causes. She raised money for cancer, the homeless, leprosy, the English National Ballet, and she worked to abolish landmines worldwide. In fact, there's a famous photograph of her shaking hands with a resident of an AIDS hospice in 1991. I'll never forget this photo. She did a lot to remove some of the stigma from people living with HIV. And as you can tell, she really loved children. But tragically, she died before becoming more involved with one particular family. This story is from George Lloyd on Larry King's show. In 1997, his 7-year-old daughter, Jamie, was undergoing leukemia treatment in Cardiff, Wales. George was part of a nonprofit organization of parents whose children had cancer. It's an organization called LATCH, also in Cardiff.
My wife wrote a letter to the princess to tell her about the charity, and she told her, you know, the problem we had with Jamie. And we had a response the following day. The letter was posted, and the following day we had a response by phone from her office saying that she was interested in getting involved.
Indeed, we're going to go there for dinner, will you not, or for tea?
For tea, yeah. That came about when, you know, she'd already shown her interest in the charity. She'd said that she would like to visit Latch in Cardiff, in South Wales, and that would have been a marvellous thing for the charity, and she wanted to meet all the children and the families. That was, you know, obviously the thing that she was coming to do.
That's terrific.
But she was taking an interest, you know. Her staff were asking every time on the phone, the princess is asking, how is Jamie? How are you? How are you? How's your wife? How are you coping? And this was incredible. They knew that Jamie was in hospital for a 10-day period a few weeks ago. Mm. And that was when the invitation to go to tea was given to me over the phone. And obviously, we were looking forward. As my son is 15 years old. The same age as William, Prince William, and we were looking forward as a family to going meeting her.
Jamie, you, how are you? How are you tonight?
Okay, thank you.
You're feeling well. This is your Uncle Larry, Jamie. It's okay. Do you have the letter that you got from Princess Di?
Yes, I did.
Will you read the letter to our audience all over the world? Okay, Jamie, go.
To dearest Jamie, it's lovely to know that you are now at home. I hope that you and your family will be able to come and see me very soon. But until then, lots of love from Diana.
It's easy to wonder what would have happened in Diana's life if she hadn't been killed in that accident that fateful day. And we're left wondering, did she ever realize the impact she had on this family and others, even though they never got to meet her? Aristocrat Jeffrey Archer believes Diana never knew how famous and influential she was.
You know, I don't ever think she realized how big she was. She would do a big function and go out in the road. There'd be 1,000 people just waiting to watch her come from the building to the car. And that would shock her that anyone was there at all. And she would often say, when we discussed a function that was coming up, is it sold out? And I said, since the day it was announced, it was sold out. What she had, which is not explainable, is not only was she, as Jonathan said, and it wasn't obviously an important factor, the important factor, the wife of the Prince of Wales, she had something extra, and it was that extra thing that got to the people. And what it was an empathy with the normal person. She loved children, she loved grown-ups, she could talk to them, and they could talk to her. And that, of course, for a member of the royal family in this country, was almost unknown, and I think those were the barriers she broke and changed the rules.
That wraps up today's episode. Thanks for joining us this week on CNN's The Rewind. I'm Michaela Pereira. Hey, if you're still feeling obsessed with the 90s, you can visit CNN.com The 90s for another blast to the past. Thanks for joining me.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.